Hi, my name is Michael Cramer and welcome to the next in the series of Cushman & Wakefield podcasts. This is obviously a very special one, which we're calling Rebalancing the Work-Life Experience. And obviously in the face of the pandemic that we're all facing, we thought it really important that we get some information out there. The idea behind this is to focus on what the data is telling us and get away from all the myths that are out there. And I have two very experienced guests, obviously remotely dialing into this, who are going to talk about. Firstly, Despina Katsakakis, who is the head of Occupier Business Performance and based in London, and Dominic Brown, who's head of insight and analysis in our Asia Pacific region based in Brisbane. It's really my pleasure to have these two people on the line because they know what they're doing and they work in our Total Workplace team. So firstly, let me get them to introduce themselves. Despina, do you want to just give a little bit of your background?
Yes. Good morning, Michael. It's great to be here. I have a 35-year experience of looking at how the changing nature of work and the impact of the workplace on employee engagement, well-being, and productivity can actually drive business performance. And I bring that input across our firm's global business. And as you mentioned, I lead our Total Workplace services globally.
Great. And Dom, can you do the same?
Yeah, sure, Michael. So as you said, Brisbane-based, but with an Asia-Pacific focus. So my role is with the regional research team to lead the thought leadership elements, but working very closely recently with the Total Workplace team. By way of background, I am a lifelong academic, sort of following my PhD using large quantitative data sets. So with our data-driven approach, there's a range of skills which I can bring to bear to hopefully get some interesting insights.
Fantastic. Okay, so I thought what we'd do is start with what we might now have to call the old normal, i.e. working from anywhere. So if we think about the sort of pre-virus world of work, where we can work anywhere we want at any time, maybe Despina, you could talk to us a little bit about what data is out there and what methodology is being used or was being used to measure productivity and what's been going on in the workplace.
Yes, it's a very interesting moment, obviously, for the world, Michael, but what we've been focusing on in the last few years is that technology and flexibility have impacted the workplace so that work was no longer somewhere employees needed to go to, but something they could, in fact, do from anywhere. The companies that we've worked with have started actively evolving their perception of that workplace from a single location to a network of physical and virtual workplaces to empower the people to drive business and to thrive. Now, of course, all of that is underpinned by flexibility and convenience. And we've seen in just a few months ago, the most recent CIPD survey say that over 78% of employees would like to have access to flexible working because it would improve their work-life balance and increase their productivity. And what we've been doing is actually beginning to dive very deep into this and look at how do we reassess what we mean by the experience of work. How do we focus on experience through evidence-based experience metrics? And we've been using our proprietary tool, Experience per Square Foot, which is our comprehensive data-driven approach to workplace experience that identifies not only the areas of success, but also the pain points. And what we look at is the areas of experience indicators that we focus on are really five significant points: your ability to focus, your personal productivity, concentration, being in the flow, your ability to team, to be productive, whilst collaborating with others. The third one is your ability to bond with your colleagues, to belong to that same community of shared values and company culture. The fourth one is our ability to renew and have energy throughout the day. And underpinning all of them, the last one is your ability to learn, continuous learning and development. And we've been looking at those across over 2.6 million data points to do a deep dive into that employee experience and assess how well companies perform and identify the key areas where expenditure is important and will make an impact.
Fascinating. And Dom, maybe if we go to you, with all that data, those 2.6 million data points, what's the data been telling us pre-us all working from home full time?
Yeah, well, it's actually really interesting because obviously there's concern and interest over what is the remote worker experience actually like. And the data has shown that it's actually very, very good. It's actually higher. The scoring overall on the overall experience score is actually higher for remote workers than it is for those that are 100% office-based. So you know, that's a really positive finding. And going back to something that Despina just said a bit earlier, it does revolve around that flexibility side of things. And the flexibility of working remotely permeates through other variables that we measure. And it's actually quite pervasive. I mean, to the point that 80% of the variables that we measure in the tool are actually more positive for remote workers than they are for office-based workers. So it isn't just one or two areas where there is a more positive experience. It's to say that there are wide-ranging benefits. Now, that's not to say that those in the office don't have positive experiences as well, but at the same time, that remote experience does have benefits to it, which then permeates further through. And you see those kind of workers have higher levels of pride, loyalty, being motivated, and all of these factors together then drive that overall more positive workplace experience.
Dom, that's really interesting. And as I said, I mean, what I think everyone now needs to be thinking about is how does that data and those insights correlate to what we're doing now? I was reading something interesting yesterday about we shouldn't be calling it working from home, we should be calling it co-working from home, because not only are we in one place at home for 5 days, but we're doing it with partners, dogs, cats, children, and all manner of things, which adds a whole level of complexity to working from home, which of course the data points to date won't tell us much about. So Despina, just going back to you and the experience per square foot methodology, does that still hold valid in this new normal that we're working with?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, what's really important is that the findings of the methodology not only are guiding us into some of the key areas to focus, they actually provide the opportunity for us to give our clients support in being able to guide and support their employees and leverage the total workplace and experience per square foot platform with a new modified survey, which is actually looking specifically at the experiences of working at home. So we're using this and we're offering this at the moment free to our clients to enable them to be able to capture the immediate impacts during this abrupt shift to imposed remote working, whilst providing that knowledge and experience to their people on what are the elements that they can be focusing on whilst they're doing this new way of working. And it's quite interesting, even, you know, on a very personal level, Michael, I have not had a desk for over 25 years. But suddenly I'm grounded and restricted to work from my home office with Skype as my only connection to my colleagues. And it kind of struck me that my current experience is exemplifying much of what I try to convince clients about, which is about flexibility. So now that we no longer have flexibility, what are the things that we have learned from experience per square foot and our data and our experience with clients that can help most? And Dom's been looking at this very deeply over the last few months. So maybe I'll switch over to him to share some of those key findings.
Yeah, great. And Dom, it'd be good to know what you've seen in Asia and what, if we've got data, what it's telling us.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll take the second question first. I mean, obviously, Asia, there was a focus with the virus here earlier, and it has spread to Europe and the US. But there are some learnings that are coming out. And I think the first thing is to be very positive about this. China is now very much emerging from the other side, and speaking with colleagues over there, they are returning to work. They have returned to work. Some teams may be on rotation, but there is a sense of normalcy coming back in the towns and cities. And that's after the period of working from home. Now, during that period, work still was done. People were still working. They were still in their jobs and doing their tasks. And so I think when we look back at this, I think we have to say, first of all, and also acknowledge that this has been a success. It doesn't mean that there are not learnings that we can take from it. But for somewhere like China, where they did have the technological capability, but it was a much more of a work in the office kind of environment, to having that very rapid transition to everyone working at home and still being able to cope, I think does send a very positive message. And there was a lot of innovation, and people rapidly started to change the way that they were operating. So in-person meetings and presentations rapidly went online. Training courses also went online as well. So there was this rapid evolution into not having that face-to-face direct connection and then how to solve it. And I think the other thing that's also coming out of this from some work that we've recently published from the Greater China research team was that as a result of this experience, we're seeing more companies now pay more attention to the remote working platform. So just drawing out a couple of stats from that work, about 70% are thinking about adopting a stronger remote working platform, and 81% of companies surveyed, and this was in February, we conducted the survey then, 81% were likely to add more collaborative technology to their platform. So I think overall, some real positive learnings from China that have come out of it. And I'm sure we'll see this be emulated across the world as there is more and more work from home.
Great. And maybe both of you can talk, what is critical about in this period now, but in terms of working from home? And when I say critical in terms of continuing to be productive and people connecting, and what underpins our ability to work in this new way? Because, I mean, certainly being based in Europe, it looks like it's going to go on for 2 or 3 months. So it's not a couple of weeks to get through and then we're back at the office.
Well, I'll kick off with one of the obvious things. Technology is absolutely key to successful remote collaboration. And one of the most important factors that we have found in successful collaboration for employees is actually the technology that they use to have effective instant messaging, video conferencing, file sharing platforms. So that is going to be critical. And therefore, you know, the associated bandwidth that companies have and tools to train people to use those remote technologies. But the thing that strikes me, Michael, that's also very important is that you mentioned that at the moment, we are no longer working at home on our own. So one of the big aspects is going to be how we actually coach people to avoid distractions. Because at the moment, we actually are sharing space with a number of family members, pets, different time schedules. So being able to actually plan time and manage time to avoid distractions is going to be a critical importance and, in fact, very useful to people moving forward. Dom, do you want to jump in with a couple of other elements?
I'll just actually back up a couple of things that you said there. And in fact, the technology piece and the collaborative technology piece, when we look at the data, is vitally important, and also that is easy to use. And in terms of strength of correlation, overall, it does actually have a stronger correlation to overall experience than the face-to-face interaction side of things. So I think that's sort of something that we all need to acknowledge at this point. And the other thing I think that's very interesting that you just brought up around the minimal distraction. And I think this is going to be interesting to see in the latest data when we get it, is going to be how that plays out. Because looking at the data that we've got and going back to the old world, as it were, as Michael was saying at the start, one of the key things around remote working is that ability to focus. But often, as you say, those are workers that have set themselves up out of the office, work from home. They're likely to be on their own at home. They've been doing it quite a while. And so they're in a groove. There is now a very different experience when you've got partners and children all at home at the same time. And so I think you point out certainly that element's going to be something that we need to watch.
One of the most interesting aspects in terms of our data is that what we have found is that the most consistently underperforming attribute is people's ability to renew throughout the day and to feel refreshed physically and mentally to be able to do their best work and to feel good in themselves. And this, of course, becomes incredibly relevant in the context of us working at home, because movement throughout the day is one of the most important things to keep wellness and energy levels high whilst working. And when we're in the office, people often naturally move around to attend a meeting, to talk to a colleague, to go grab a cup of coffee. When we're confined from working from home, heads down or on the phone for hours at a time, it is very important to begin to plan for the opportunities to get up, to move around, to take a walk outside to recharge. So this ability to think about our wellness is going to, I think, become very, very critical as people begin to plan the way they deal with this imposed new work style.
I'm just thinking about that. I guess it is the responsibility of the employer to, as they do in the office, push out to people working at home, you know, what wellness should look like or could look like without imposing on the, you know, it's a bit of a personal thing in one way, but in another way, you're saying without it, we're not as productive as we should be. And in fact, we're likely to go backwards maybe because we just don't move around as much.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's an element of education here, but there's also a sense of empowerment that people need from their employers, because employees need to feel that they can make choices that best serve their personal needs. So, of course, trust is the most important element that underpins flexible working. And we know that organizations that implement flexible working programs have incredibly strong sense of trust with their employees. So in that sense, when it works, employees don't feel guilty about taking a break during the day to exercise, to put dinner on the stove, to make time for helping their children with homework. This is absolutely critical in today's context of this fully blurred work-life experience.
That's a really good point, because what's really interesting when we've been getting into this is just how correlated and interrelated the various variables are that all lead up to this overall thing that we call workplace experience. And Despina was just sort of mentioning around the incidental movement to go make a coffee or to go to a meeting or to see a client during the day to help keep those energy levels. But it's also that movement which leads to the interaction side of things when you're in an office. And that often leads to then garnering information. And it's quite an interesting way that if you look at office-based workers and the correlation between the various variables, you can see that the office-based workers get a lot of their information from access to colleagues, face-to-face interaction. So again, sort of thinking back to a mass work from home side of things, those incidental meetings with a client or with a colleague, and oh, did you hear about so-and-so, or have you got a view on this? Those kind of interactions then don't happen. So that then leads on to another a critical factor that we see that plays a big role in the overall workplace experience. And that's keeping everyone informed of what's going on, whether it's a receiving information, giving information. It's how do you keep that communication going when you don't have those incidental encounters during the day?
And I think that's a really interesting point. And I wanted to move on in a little bit to what happens when we go back to the office, as it were. But that idea of, and you mentioned technology, Despina, but it's more than having conference calls. It's about moving to video. It's somehow trying to replicate as best you can that face-to-face meeting without you actually having one. So, I mean, is the technology there for us to do that in a way that we want, or do you think that's going to get developed even further, the sort of communication as close to real life as it can be without it actually being in person?
I think there is a a huge test at the moment for the technologies that are out there. And certainly the organizations that have been implementing it, those virtual collaboration tools, are at a much better point to be able to quickly shift into this new norm. But what's interesting is, as Dom was saying, in places like China, where working from home was not the norm, they've adjusted very quickly because the technology does exist. So we will see a real acceleration of implementing these new types of virtual collaboration tools. And no doubt, as what happens always in moments of crisis, we will see a lot of innovation on new types of collaboration tools that will be much more about ensuring not just sharing of knowledge and information, but maintaining culture and social values and community, which I think is the thing that as human beings, we will miss the most in this context of constrained flexibility.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's very hard to see how we're going to be able to do that. And you mentioned crisis that we're in. We all love the quote, never let a good crisis go to waste. Came from Winston Churchill and is used by politicians all the time. But Despina, when we go back to the office, as it were, are we just going to revert to what we had before? Or do you think there's going to be a real shift in the way people think about working?
I believe it's going to be a completely different paradigm. And I'm very excited about this new paradigm because we have been trying to help our clients move to this new way of thinking for some time. But as Dom said earlier, one of the greatest concerns people have had is, will they be able to function effectively with people remote working? Well, if we look at the lessons learned from China and we assume that, yes, we will be able to function effectively, then when we go back, we of course will look to decrease useless space and wasted time and carbon and outdated policies that expect people to be in the office. If you just look at some of the data, remote workers have a 42% lower carbon footprint compared to daily commuters. For our clients, we know that they can reduce their workplace requirements by 20 to 40% by leveraging flexible working policies. What it does mean, however, is that whilst on the one hand, we are reducing carbon and we're reducing workspace requirements, we will need to create a greater focus on designing office environments that support meaningful destinations, meaningful experiences for people to have face-to-face engagement, collaboration, reinforce that sense of culture and community and connection to brand. But I think no doubt out of this, what I hope will increase above all is the ability for organizations to really demonstrate trust in their people and to improve employee well-being and therefore the resilience of people to do great work in a completely new type of context that really, you know, embraces a network of physical and virtual places to support our convenience and our functional requirements.
Utopia you're describing. Let's. I remain slightly pessimistic, but Dom, change my view. What's happening in Asia? It may be too early to really know, but are we beginning to see, as people go back to work, a rethink? Or is that something that we're going to look at over the next sort of 6 to 12 months to see if it actually happens?
Yeah, I think it's still a bit early yet. I mean, just referencing back to the survey work that we did in early February, or the Greater China team did in early February, it did point to a greater interest in take up of a variety of different work practices. Obviously, that then needs to be put into action. But I do think that because this is so widespread and the working from home is now so prevalent in so many places, that it's always going to have to be in the psyche at every time there's a lease, there's a fit out, there's a space requirement, And I'm hearing so many interesting viewpoints and so many interesting questions from colleagues from all different aspects of real estate, that I think with this common thought and common collective, that things will have to change as a result. It's almost inevitable that there will be change as a result of this. And equally, more widely, with some of those stats that Despina was talking about around climate change, I can see there being a whole wealth of research being done in industry sectors outside of our own on the impacts of what remote working does, either for the environment, commuting, transit times, and helping those experiences then influence city planning and things like that. I think this time right now will create so much research content. And as a researcher, I find it hugely exciting about some of the possibilities that could come out of this and some of the topics that we could look to explore. That I think then there's going to be a lot of echoes of what we're talking about now and an evolution of what we're talking about now for some time to come. And so I think it's going to hold a lot of currency and is going to be in the forefront of people's minds when they're making decisions around what their space needs to do, how much space they need, where do they need their space, how do their employees want to work, how can we get the best out of them, how can we help them be their best. And I think all of these things will come through in time. It is a bit early right now, and even in Asia, it's a bit early right now. But no, I do genuinely believe that there will be change as a result of this.
Great. And I think I love the optimism of both of you and the fact that we maybe as an industry and as individuals and the work that we do means that we're going to look at everything that's happening now and use that going forward to make things better. I think our time is up. I think that's been a fascinating conversation. There's plenty more to come in the series with lots of different people and experts in their field talking about this. And I certainly think sustainability and carbon footprint is one that we will be picking up on. So Despina and Dom, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.